All right. Hey, welcome in. Debut episode of Rush Hour. That's what we're calling it. I watched Rush Hour on Netflix the other day, and it inspired me. Unless, you know, maybe we want to change the name. But
I like that, though. It works.
Yeah. So Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio, one of the best in the business. You're going to be joining us every week this college football season. Nick, how are you?
I'm fired up. I don't know if I like Rush Hour 1 or 2 more, though. 2 is pretty good. But yeah, some sequels are better than the originals. I'd say Rush Hour 2 is one of them. But I'm fired up because we've had this conversation before. You know, I come on here, but like, Kentucky's not always worth talking about to the right. whole SEC audience, but I'll watch all of the games. I eat it up. I drink it up. I love the show. And I got to get my SEC football takes off. So I'm happy to be joining that SEC podcast once a week to deliver some takes. And, you know, not everybody's going to like them, but I'm going to tell the SEC fans what they need to hear. And sometimes it's going to be a hard truth. I know Auburn fans, they're hearing a lot of hard truths right now. It's been a rough preseason for them. Would you say it's been a rough preseason for your Vols, Michael? Because, you know, things haven't always been crystal clear. But that's what's great is right now you get to dream big, and you also got people like me to tell you, not so fast. And we're all right. Nobody can prove us wrong yet. So we've got another week. The next 2 weeks we get to still bake up the preseason takes and then finally get into the games. And I'm excited to react to some of them and preview some of them with you this fall, Mike.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that. You led with something I should have led with. Please, folks, cousins, don't turn off. This is not a Kentucky hour by any means.
We could go into
depth on Kentucky. We can go into depth on any of the teams. I'm having Nick come on here to just share all his thoughts on the SEC. So I thought that was a big reason. That's probably how we got him on the program, so that he could share his thoughts on other SEC teams. But yeah, you talk about Tennessee. I don't know how familiar you are with this term, Nick. Negavol. But I am fully embracing my Negavol at this point in time. And again, they are pissed off at me for suggesting this, Nick. But man, Tennessee over under 8.5. And I mean, I think as of today, there's 3 automatic losses: Georgia at home, at Bama, at Florida. Tennessee's not beaten Alabama or Florida on the road since 2003. And then, I mean, hell, I think Oklahoma, we can talk about them. I know your buddy Adam Luckett, 11 personnel, go check it out. His best bet is Oklahoma under. But I feel different than Oklahoma. I'm not saying that's an automatic loss for Tennessee, but if I had to pick the game today, I'm picking Oklahoma to go into Neyland Stadium and win. So, quickly, the losses are racking up here for Josh Heupel and company.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. 8-4 year isn't the worst year for Tennessee. That's only one game, that was 2 games worse than a year ago. But also, you got to look at all the talent you lost. And then the other part that I know a lot of Vols probably want to overlook because they are the superior orange, but the Syracuse Orangemen, Steve Angeli, we saw him come in and play well for Notre Dame in that college football playoff run. That was a former Kentucky football recruit that they were pretty high on. And I'm not going to promise anything, but Fran Brown's recruited well up there. That's not a game where you can just kind of dip your toe in and beat the snot out of Marshall and Kent State or whoever it might be at the beginning of the year. Joey Aguilar is going to be asked to come in right away and score. And I think it you know, being a Negavol isn't the worst idea right now, because you got to consider, I mean, Chris Brazel was your 5th healthy receiver. I mean, how many healthy receivers were there even during training camp? He has to deal with his off-the-field issues. This is getting cleared, you know, tale as old as time. But, I mean, the other part, too, is when I hear a lot of, you know, maybe like Ron Slay or some of those guys talk about how good this Tennessee defense could be, a lot of it's just expecting Jermon McCoy to be the Jermon McCoy that we've seen in the past. And, like, I mean, how much has he even done in the preseason? So, like, the uncertainties abound. But I don't think an 8-4 year would be a terrible year. And honestly, Mike, what a lot of this year is going to come down to between, all right, that wasn't a bad 8-4, or, oh God, that was a terrible 8-4, is if you lose that game in Lexington. Because
God, here we go.
I know how it is. I feel it's the same way with Kentucky when you lose to Vanderbilt. You can't lose to Vandy. The same. That's how Tennessee fans feel about Kentucky. That's why all them Florida coaches got fired. Dan Mullen is at UNLV. He is coaching in week zero for the running Rebs because Florida fans couldn't tolerate losing to Kentucky on a regular basis. I'm not saying that Heupel's going to do that. Heupel's a great coach. But I know how this goes, right? Like, if that gets tagged on you, then the whole season is looked at differently. Same thing, like, if the A&M and Arkansas series, like, I don't know what the magic number is for Sam Pittman. And I think it's kind of foolish to try to put a magic number on it. But if you win that A&M game, that is a series that is just, I mean, kicked you in the groin time and 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 time again. But, like, you know, this is a tough schedule. You've got Notre Dame coming to town. But if you're able to reverse the curse of Jerry World, the game finally is back in home stadiums in the SEC. If you can win that game and then pull off another upset somewhere else, like, I know that Arkansas fans probably aren't dreaming about 6-6 seasons, but if you're able to get at least one monkey off your back and one more upset, you can't be mad at Sam Pittman, right? Like, that, not all 6-6 seasons are created equally.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you just made me think of something. So what do you think is more likely this year? That Arkansas beats Texas A&M in Fayetteville, which, to your point, and Arkansas fans know all too well, you know, this game's been in Jerry World, but now they've gotten away from that, so we're going back to home and homes. What's more likely, Arkansas beats A&M at home, or Texas A&M can be better than 8-4? Texas 8-4. So Texas wins 9, or Arkansas beats A&M. What do you think is more likely this season?
Oh, man, that's a great question, Michael. And I think I haven't drank the Kool-Aid as much as others have on A&M because Marcel Reed, I mean, I feel like we've done the same thing with Texas A&M quarterbacks time and time again, whether it's Wegman, going back to the guy that's on Kentucky's campus now, Calzada. It feels like ever since Johnny Manziel, there's always a guy who comes in halfway through the year, he's pretty good, and they're like, oh man, year two, he's going to be awesome. And then they kind of stink. And the part that I think is the most concerning is that, like, Jimbo didn't leave the cupboard bare. There was still some talent. I mean, they didn't have all the guys. You know, Walter Nolan was at Ole Miss last year. But, I mean, Elko is a defensive guy, and he was pissed about the defense last year. I know the bowl game presser was a little bit – that post-game presser was a little bit different. But and they did play well in that rivalry game against Texas. But I just I have a hard time – drinking that Kool-Aid because they feel like an 8-4 team where they'll stub their toe. I mean, I think Garrett Nussmeier and that wide receiver crew, they might score a 50 burger on him. You know, like, I just don't have enough blind faith in one specific entity anywhere on A&M that says, oh, they've got one of the best units in the SEC in this. If things go wrong, they can rely on him. So I think it's more likely that Arkansas pulls off that upset than it is that A&M has a 9-3 year where they're contending for the playoff again.
Mm-hmm. And hey, Nick, to prepare for this, I was listening to one of the latest 11 Personnel. I cannot recommend that show enough. It's if you like this, it's Nick, it's Adam. It's I mean, it's everything you could want in a Kentucky show. But you also, you know, you did your like season primer, so you did more than Kentucky.
Yeah.
You gave this man a shout out, Garrett Nussmeier.
Yes.
9-1 Heisman odds. Can you go into why you like that one?
Some of it is like, we just can't overthink this. History is history. It's kind of how I got to do some of my predictions when talking about my Kentucky Wildcats. But, I mean, we don't have to think that far back to Jayden Daniels winning the Heisman Trophy in a very similar scenario. And I was much lower on Jayden Daniels going into that Heisman Trophy season, right? Like, even though he had the year of Arizona State under his belt before he got with Brian Kelly, that second year jump was enormous. And we know that Kelly's going to ask him to shoulder a lot of it, but at least this year he helped him some. I think Nussmeier learned a lot of lessons from last year. I don't have his numbers pulled up right away, but really, like, if he just takes off like 4 interceptions, he's in Heisman conversation a year ago. Yeah. 29 touchdowns, 12 picks. That'll probably be closer to like 38-7. And I don't know about the completions percentage, but he's going to be a 4,000-yard passer. I really like what they added to that wide receiver room. You could argue it's one of the best wide receiver rooms in all of college football. We got to see Barrion Brown at Kentucky, and he isn't a wide receiver one, but as a wide receiver three, he could be a lot of fun in that offense. So I just think he's going to have outstanding numbers. And even if they lose to Clemson in week one, there's still a path there, right? There's still a path to be a 10-2 football team that's in the college football playoff that's going to have numbers that are far and away better than anyone else. So I'm going to take it to the bank, get him at 9-1. Although, Mike, it's one of those things where my head and my heart is torn. I mentioned history. After watching the last 5 years, I'd be an idiot to say, yeah, let's go bet on LSU to win in week one. But at the same time, my heart's saying, I really like this LSU team this year. I think they're going to the college football playoff. If I'm so high on them, shouldn't they be able to beat Clemson? It's like, well, it is Clemson. It has that Death Valley. So I'm still conflicted on it. How do you feel about that game?
Well, again, I mean, history says LSU is going to lose it in spectacular fashion, maybe like a mixed extra point or a blocked extra point or something like that. But I've been saying this, Nick, let me know if you agree, that while and I get it, because they haven't won an opener since 2019, and because this is a massive game, arguably, you know, aside from Texas, Ohio State, the best game of opening mm-hmm. weekend. So there's all this attention on it. And yeah, it'd be great to win it. But because of this, obviously, the expanded playoff, I don't think a loss really kills you.
No.
I think the game that'll kill them is September 13th, Florida. If you lose to Florida, remember, they had an opportunity to hire Billy Napier. They lost to Florida last year. They own Florida at home in the real Death Valley. So if you all of a sudden lose two in a row to Florida, to this guy that you could have hired, he was in your backyard. Hell, he was like... He was campaigning to get that job, and they didn't even consider his ass because they had Brian Kelly. And I understand. I'm very critical of Brian Kelly. I think Brian Kelly's like twice as good a coach as Billy Napier. But, hey, I'll be proven dead wrong if Florida goes into Death Valley and beats LSU. That's the one where I think Brian Kelly loses the fan base if he loses.
And I think that's a fair point. And the way that it would happen is if – the light didn't come on for Blake Baker's defense. Because that was really, I think, ultimately the most disappointing part of last year. I know Harold Perkins was injured, so that, you know, that plays a big part in it, right? But he plays a fun style. Like, it's not necessarily third and Grantham, but, like, they're going to pin their ears back and get after guys. And, like, that should cripple DJ Lagway. And I don't mean literally, but it might actually happen literally, because – we know how Lagway is, right? Like, he, you know, he gets a hangnail on the wrong finger, he might have to be wheeled off in a wheelchair. So, like, that part of it, if Blake Baker, who I know, part of me, like, I was a big fan of his at Missouri's, and then I get to watch him on your Netflix show, where you're the star of the show, but you watch him there and you're like, this guy should be able to figure out, with this amount of talent between Witt and Perkins finally being healthy. I know Matt House kind of couldn't figure out how to utilize Perkins the right way. But point being, I feel like I know what I'm going to get out of Brian Kelly's offense with Nussmeier and that receiver group. If this team, if Blake Baker can get this defense rolling, like, that's where they can be national championship good. And that's where, you know, we might not know it right away in week one. But by week three, like, that, say what you want about Lagway's experience and Jaden Ball and all those young guys playing in last year, that's a whole different ball game, Tiger Stadium, right? Like, that is one you are 100% correct. They cannot afford to lose that one whatsoever. And in fact, like, that's one of those, like, I kind of want to count how many dollars I got in my pocket. I don't know what that number is going to be, but that feels like that could be a statement win, where they just kind of say, hey, I know we weren't at our best in week one. Maybe we stubbed our toe, kept a little too close. But I could see him just absolutely rolling. And that's when things, they can really kick the momentum up. Yeah, you got some tough road games. But I'm a big LSU believer this year.
Well, we kind of already have stumbled into one of my favorite things, Nick, and that's firing these coaches. So, speaking of firing, let's go to Florida real quick, because I know you have your heart set I think it's just more personal for you than anything. You've got your heart set on Kentucky beating Tennessee, yep. But could you see a world where, I mean, I'm very high on Florida. Now, all this DJ Lagway not practicing, that is very, very concerning to me. But I think it's very realistic where we see a world where even if they come out and they look like $1 million the first couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and maybe they even beat Miami. I think they will beat Miami. That's probably the SEC homer in me. But Texas, I'm looking at Texas A&M, Mississippi State, they should smoke. But then Georgia, you know, yep. if the losses keep racking up here,
yeah,
you said it yourself, Florida coaches get fired for losing to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Could Kentucky pull the – I don't even know if it would be an upset by that point in time because Mark Stoops has had a lot of success.
Yeah.
And there was even a time when old Billy Napier, I still can't believe he said this, Nick. He said – that Kentucky program, that's the program we want to beat. They should have fired his ass that day. and if it happens again, I don't see any way he survives.
I mean, honestly, that's about as much as Mullen. What was his exact quote about, we'll talk about recruiting when it's time to talk about recruiting? It's almost as bad. But you know when the last time Florida traveled to Lexington in November was? It's before you or I were born. I want to say 81. It has been a very long time. There was a deal with the devil made in the SEC league office where Florida was able to get that game earlier in the year so they wouldn't have potentially freeze their buns off in Lexington. A lot of it's just going to come down to, like, is Florida's offensive line as advertised or even better, right? Like, because – I think to avoid any sort of DJ Lagway sophomore slump, they got to be, you know, best offensive line in the SEC. Maybe not best, but they got to be one of those that we talk about. Like, you just got to see the way these guys play. Like, I can just imagine Cole Kubelik coming on and talking about how awesome they are. Because, like, Lagway, for as outstanding as some of his performances were, like that Kentucky game last year, I think he was 9 of 20. But it was for like 300 yards and 3 touchdowns or something. You know what I mean? Like, it was all these huge chunk plays with receivers who were really talented and making these big explosives. And so, like, from like a down-to-down standpoint, that's where he has to take a huge jump. And that's where I very much lean on the side – like, I err on the side of sophomore slump when it comes to Lagway, because I think there's just a huge – like, he's got a heavy weight on his shoulders. The schedule – as much as we talk, like, that is all we did all last season. We're down at SEC Media Days and Florida schedule, hardest schedule ever. Like, dude, it is mostly the same schedule. I know you tiptoe your way in a little bit better, but we already talked about going to Tiger Stadium. Mario Cristobal, he might Cristobal over himself in that game, but, like, they're good. Arch Manning, right? There could be your other potential Heisman Trophy guy. You have to go on the road. Like, that 4-game stretch right there is just absolutely brutal. And so, like, can a bunch of young guys who weren't playing a ton and then they started rattling off all these wins and they started believing, like, they're going to get punched in the mouth again during that stretch. They just are. And then you think Kirby's going to take it easy on them and the cocktail party? Hell no. So that's – I'm not a believer in Florida this year. I do think that if you were just to tell me to line up the quarterbacks and maybe rank them on who's the most talented and maybe probably the best pro, I'd probably put DJ Lagway number one, but I'm not ready to say that this year. I'm not ready to say that this year. I watched Anthony Richardson, all right? And until Lagway starts being more consistent, then, you know, I'm going to think more of him as Richardson Jr. than I am the next coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and I believe you've already on this show have stated your belief that Kentucky is beating Ole Miss once again.
Oh, yeah.
What does that say about your belief in Lane Kiffin and company in Oxford this year? Is that a one-off, or are they in for a rough year, you think?
I think they're in for a rough year, and that 8.5 number feels like a – That's just – if you're betting that over, you're just blindly wagering on Lane Kiffin. Hey, Michael, what was Lane Kiffin's record last year?
Last year, 9-3 – well, 10 if we count the bowl game.
Well, they – so if you bet them over 8.5 last year, you would have won.
Mm-hmm.
Where are all those guys that were on his team last year?
20 guys in the NFL.
I mean, like, even Jordan Watkins, he was like kind of an afterthought, and that dude was a third round pick. Like, I know that Lane Kiffin is a good ball coach and one of the best play callers in all of college football. And I know that Austin Simmons has all this potential in the world. Dude, Jackson Dart, it took him a second, right? It took him a while to figure things out when he got to Ole Miss. It's going to take Austin Simmons some time. And I just I have so much respect for what they did in the portal last year. Like, they had everything teed up to win big last year, and then Dart saw ghosts down in Gainesville. And then they, you know, Kentucky happened too, right? That's part of it. The biggest thing that they have to be able to do to have success is to be able to consistently run the football. When they don't, they are just – I know we all think of them as this throw the ball all around the yard, but, like, if they can't consistently run the football, they struggle to set up their passing game. So, I mean, we can go through and rattle the schedule off again, but 8.5 under, it's one of my locks of all locks this preseason. I love the under. I'm fading a year one Austin Simmons with Lane Kiffin, and I don't think that's even like a crazy thing to say. Like, I think that if you just look at the talent they lost versus what they brought in, they got some guys, and you know, and Caden Lee was a fine player, but like, that was a ball theme last year, one that should have been in the college football playoff.
Right, and it's probably not – this is not a fair comparison necessarily, because I think Lane Kiffin is a lot better coach than Mike Norvell.
Mm-hmm.
But
– oh, that's a great comp. Yeah.
Evidence last year where, hell, I mean, 2 years ago, Florida State was awesome, went undefeated. We'll just reload, do it via the portal, and it blew up in their face. And I'm not suggesting that Ole Miss is going to – whatever Florida State was, 2-10 or 3-9. But I mean, I think that just shows you that
it's possible.
Going to the portal that heavy can blow up. And when I say blow up, I'm talking maybe like 6-6. I don't think that's like totally unrealistic.
No, not at all. And that's the, like, there's just a higher degree of variance when you're going to be playing the portal game. And I don't really care who you are. Florida State did show us the most extreme example, and I don't think that is ever possible ever again. Undefeated regular season to 2-10. Like, that sort of level of implosion. I mean, you got something kind of weird this year where Marshall's head coach, Charles Huff, left for Southern Miss and took, like, the whole team. So you might have a Sun Belt champ go to being, like, a 2-win team. But on the magnitude that Florida State did it, it is a cautionary tale, at least in Kiffin's case. He does have, like, Simmons has been in the program. He's not having to portal the quarterback as well, and he's not doing it with DJU. You know, like, but my overall hesitancy is just that, like, we act like that was just a 1 year portal deal. Like, that was just – no. Like, they were trending that direction. They retained a lot of talent from the year prior. Trey Harris, Jordan Watkins. You had Jackson Dart going to year three. Like, that was a lot of stacking up success and then getting the big pieces like your Walter Nolans to come in and really reinforce the trenches. So that's where if it bottoms out, I think Lane's good enough and the schedule isn't up, like – tough, bad enough to where it's just, you know, like a Florida's murderer's row. But there's enough tough games away from home or that it ain't going to be as sunshine and roses as they think down in Oxford.
Hey, Nick, just a heads up. You've made Old Mace. You've made the list. They're already marking this down.
All right. Get the Sharpie out.
And Jeez Louise says, don't open your mail for the next few months. And I also saw someone call you Skinny Shade. So, hey, you're on a roll here.
Which, I mean, I really feel for Cousin Shane right now. I mean, what they're doing to Cracker Barrel, I mean, like, that is just, you know, like, it's worse than getting the whip out and just, like, smacking them on the hind. Like, you're not picking your own switch. I mean, this is slow torture. Chinese water torture, just one little drip, you know. What happened to my country, you know? It's a real shame. It's a real shame.
Well, how about another coach I know you're a big fan of? How about Missouri, who you called for their downfall, I believe, this time last year? How'd that work out for you?
It didn't work out. Hey, you know what? I that's how big of a Blake Baker fan I am. But, I mean, What has Eli got on Sankey? What did he do to get that schedule last year? Because, I mean, it's still, like, I was going through, I was previewing every team for Kentucky Sports Radio, just giving, like, here's a snapshot of what they're dealing with. I mean, this could be, I believe, the first time in the entire history of Missouri football that they could win 10 games in three consecutive seasons. And, I mean, Mike, they got upset Bama at home, dude. And every other game, I mean, I don't know. Like,
I think if they beat Bama, they're going to the playoff. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, Auburn, what's Auburn going to be in mid-October? What's Oklahoma going to be? I know A&M, like, they can be a little tricky. Like, there are some games here that you think, like, oh, that could be a little tricky. But most of them are at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, they should be able to. I know that Auburn has an awesome wide receiver crew, but, like, Ahmad Hardy, that's a transfer portal player that every SEC fan needs to hope. That dude's a badass. I mean, he played for arguably the worst team in college football last year at ULM, and he had 1,400 yards rushing. It was a, you know, Kentucky callback. Everybody knew Lynn Bowden was going to get the football and he was going to run it, and they couldn't stop him. That's kind of what Hardy was. They were just like, we suck. We can't do anything. We'll just give this big SOB the ball, and he's going to go run some people over with. Like, that's how, like, he is a very talented back. And he's not the only one they got there.
Right.
I know it's some, like, probably some Eli bullcrap to keep Sam Horn happy, but, like, shouldn't Bo Prabula have won that convincingly? I mean,
the rumor is they're trying to keep Kansas off balance.
Okay. I mean, but I think Missouri can have a nice punch with Prabula and Hardy out of that backfield, running the ball. They can really set the floor. Like, they can create a high floor. Like, what's their ceiling? I don't know. But, like, as long as that baseline is higher, and I think that's really the biggest difference between Drinkwitz and Barry Odom. I was shocked they moved away from Odom when they did, because it's not like he was doing great, but he wasn't doing terrible. You know, he was in that 6-6, 7, you know, maybe an 8-win range. But, like, I didn't think Drink was capable of making 8-4 basically the floor. And I think that's what you're looking at here. Like, that's if everything goes horribly. But really, this looks like a 9-3 Citrus Bowl team, right?
I think so. And to your point about Ahmad Hardy, I don't have the actual stats, but I think he rushed for like 1,350 yards, something like that. And he had over 1,000 yards after contact.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, he's a damn beast. Speaking of beast that, mm-hmm. that I am very high on, this might be your greatest nemesis in the SEC. Shane Beamer, come on down. What's your thoughts on Carolina? And I've shared this before. I can't remember if it was on the show or not, but when I got to see the first episode of the Netflix documentary, Nick, he was sitting in front of me there at SEC Media Days, and just every time they showed Beamer, he was cackling and giggling and pointing at the screen and laughing.
You could feel the eye rolls, like they're just all the way in the back of my head, like, oh, come on.
I can't believe it. So it was actually one of his children, right, that said 9-3 or you're dead or something like that. But I don't know if you saw that part of the Netflix.
Yeah. I think it's the sign of a very insecure person that you have to use external factors for internal motivation. And he's a great PR man, and it bugs the hell out of me. But I do have to give credit where credit's due, because there's something about him. Like, you see how crazy he is on the sidelines, and you just wonder, like, there's no way this guy, like, this is sustainable, right? Well, somehow he gets his teams playing better and better in November. So, a tip of the cap, a salute to you, Shane Beamer. But here's the thing. And it took me a while to get here, and it was, I got a little bit of help from Connor O'Gara on this, friend of the program, from Saturday Down South, because the thing that I didn't understand, it was Dane Brugler rolls out his initial NFL draft mock draft for next year, and Lenora Sellers is number two. And it had been on my mind before, but I'm like, if Sellers is supposed to be this good, why is Dal Loggins leaving? right? Like, that's your meal ticket. You gotta ride that thing. App State's a good job, but you could get a Big Ten job maybe, or at least an ACC job if Sellers has a big year, right? Like, you know, I'm just basically Conference USA plus. So, I don't think that Dow Loggins. At first, I thought it was an indictment on Sellers. I think it's just an indictment on that entire offensive operation, which, like, let's be real. It's been very up and down for Shane Beamer. You're either good or you're really bad. You know, Rattler had to do a little bit of everything mm-hmm. for him. And when he had pieces around him, it worked. But when he didn't, he got his ass kicked, right? And their best receiver is a guy that should be playing defensive end alongside Dylan Stewart. And I know there's going to be some South Carolina fans are mad at that, but, like, I mean, he's basically a tight end out there. Yeah, I get it. He's fast. Well, get that big son bitch in a three-point stance and tell him to go get the quarterback. Like, that guy should be an edge. Now, regardless, it's not only that. They spent in the portal at running back last year, and I think a lot of people were like, man, that's desperate that they're willing to pay the number that Rocket Sanders was asking. But that worked for them. Like, does Lenora Sellers have a running game to back it up? I think that they are going to ask too much of him. And here's the other part too, Mike. Who's South Carolina's play caller this year?
It'll be old Mike Shula.
Mike Shula. Do we really trust Mike Shula? Like, do you really trust Mike Shula to be the play caller for a college football playoff team? I know we spent all this time in the NFL and blah, 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 blah. But, like, I mean, it's still Mike Shula. Like, you're going to walk to the window and bet on Mike Shula? No. Sorry.
Ed, I've brought this up on this show. I don't know if you have picked this up yet, Nick, but I'm going to screen share here.
Okay.
The man to me, let's see. Can you see that? The yeah. man looks dangerously close to Will Muschamp. I mean, if that's not a bad omen, I don't know what is. Again, we should not necessarily hold that against him, but well, I'm searching for talking should. Points here.
I mean, he looks like a Will Muschamp who has seen some stuff, right? Right. He knows where Kirby's buried all of the reckless driving tickets, you know? Like,
Well, hey, speaking of, you know, it's a good way, Nick, to not be reckless.
What's that?
Go check out our friends, ponchooutdoors.com/SEC. They're sporting the show this week, nice. Nick. And if the cousins go over to ponchooutdoors/SEC, then get $10 off free shipping on their first order over at Poncho Outdoors. Poncho Outdoors has all kinds of great menswear. They got four different styles of shirts and that many Ooh. College licensed. So they have like the Neyland, which I know you won't be ordering, but nope. a lot of good cousins will. They've got many, many different brands that this, and one thing we love, Nick, this is an Austin based business. So it's in our SEC footprint.
Heck
and
yeah.
they have the Poncho Promise where every order is fully guaranteed, full refunds, free shipping. You can try stuff on, get the size. Maybe you get the wrong size or maybe you've lost weight and maybe you need a size down. They got you covered over at ponchooutdoors/SEC. I put a link in the description. Shout out Poncho Outdoors. You will not be disappointed.
Man, I love these ball caps. I'm a big, you're a bald guy. You gotta mm-hmm. have a deep collection. I'm surrounded by them all over the place. I'm going to have to give me some Poncho Outdoors. These are sharp.
Absolutely. We can hook you up.
And here's the other part, too, is I can wear a fish hat.
Mm-hmm.
People might think I can catch a fish. That doesn't mean I do, but they'll think it.
Exactly. All right. Hey, what team I haven't asked you about, Nick? This is my pick to win the SEC. What's your thoughts on Alabama? Do you think, are you buying into Kalen DeBoering? Do you think he can bounce back and prove to be an elite coach? Like, I was told he was an elite coach. He sure as hell didn't look like it last year.
I wonder how much of the secret Kalen DeBoer sauce is just Ryan Grubb. And so that's why I do like that line of thinking, Michael, is just like, hey, Brian Grove gets Ty Simpson rocking and rolling. People forget he was a five-star coming out of high school. The only part that does make me a little bit worried about Ty Simpson is I know that Milroe could make a lot of plays last year with his legs. He was a great ad-libber, but he had some clear limitations. And that damn Rose Bowl, I can't get over him not being able to take a snap, right? Like some of that little stuff. And I do think that Milroe's his deficiencies really held the board back. Now you're bringing in Ryan Grubb. I just wonder, like, if you believe in Simpson now, why couldn't you believe in him enough to play him over Milroe a year ago? That's the only part that's really holding me back because, I mean, Caden Proctor is going to be one of the best left tackles in all of America. Is Ryan Williams, he's still 17?
He's 18 now.
I want a 17-year-old for life, right? We can't let that story die. But, like, it feels like they should get there, and that excites me because what happens when they don't? You know, like, people gave him some leash a year ago, but now it's kind of, all right, you got your guy back. Go do it. Go be the Alabama Crimson Tide. So I can't wait to watch because it could – if you thought it was bad after that Vandy game, if there's another sort of – could get ugly. Like, here's the part that I can totally see the scenario too, and it kind of unfolded that way last year, although it didn't all the way come to fruition. But you can see a year where Hugh Freeze is just kind of Hugh Freezing around at Auburn and you think all hope is lost. But it's the second half of the Iron Bowl, and Alabama's got 10 wins. Or maybe even 9, right? And it's like, do or die. You got to win to get into the playoff. And all of a sudden, all of them folks in Crimson Tide are sweating it out going into the third and fourth quarter.
Now, hey, here's an interesting question or comment from Mike Andrews. I'm mm-hmm. just kind of curious where you go with this, Nick. Guys, remember, DeBoering has only been a head coach for 5 years. Saban has more titles than DeBoering has years coaching. Now, maybe I may have misled Mike A because I only have this is like where it's true 5 years in FBS.
Yeah.
But DeBoer before this was at Sioux Falls, which I literally never heard of till I heard of DeBoering, and he was there for 5 additional seasons. So
that's true.
I don't know where do you lean with that, Nick? We're like, I mean, I think by this point in time, when you're the freaking Alabama coach, there should be no more acclimation to FBS. I consider him like a 10-year vet.
No, I agree with you to that extent. Just from head coaching experience, for me, it's more so of like, you came in, that was in what, February, right? Like we kind of saw something similar. I know a lot of people out here aren't locked into SEC basketball, but like when John Calipari left Kentucky basketball, and that was kind of late in the process, you got to get a new coach in a hurry. Like he was kind of behind the eight ball and couldn't go out and get the guys he wanted. And then his right-hand man Grubb was supposed to follow him, but then at the 11th hour, it's like, actually, let me try out the Seattle Seahawks thing. So like, and then you're kind of stuck with what you got, and what you had is Jalen Milroe. I don't think Jalen Milroe is the ideal Kalen DeBoer quarterback. So that's part of it for me where, I mean, there should be no excuses for losing at Vanderbilt when you're Alabama. But that is his, like, one – like, he used his what's the word I'm looking for here?
His mulligan?
Yeah. He used his one mulligan, no more breakfast balls. Right, you took it last year. You were 9-3. Probably should have been 10-2. So now that's what I wonder, Mike, is if it's 10-2 still not good enough? Will it be good enough if they're just in the playoff? What if they only win a game? You know,
mm-hmm.
It probably won't be good enough for many Bammers.
Well, let's stay in that state, Nick, because I'm curious to know. 9 times out of 10, Hugh Freeze is going to throw somebody under the bus. Will he do it this year? What's your thoughts on Auburn? A lot of people, Shane included, they're very high on Auburn. Whereas I think there's a better than not chance Hugh Freeze gets fired by November. Where do you lean?
Oh man, I see, and that is, isn't that just the Auburn football experience? the coach is going to get fired or they're going to go to the playoff, right? Like, there's no in between there. They, even when Malzahn was rocking and rolling, there was no just like casual 8-4s, right? Like, it was 7-5 or national championship, right? Like, there's no in between. And that is, over time, you know, I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. It's we love our basketball around here. So, like, it was a slower integration into the cultures of many of these programs. And none has been more fun to fall in love with than just the ups and downs, the manic Auburn Tigers. They have been just a joy all preseason. I love that yesterday we were recording a show, and we just Googled Hugh Freeze, and, like, him golfing is the first picture. You know, like, I – and here's the thing, too, Mike, is I actually leaned on the side of actually Auburn's going to be good this year. And then I've seen the way that, like, I thought Ole Miss would have taught Freeze where he messed up, similar to Coach O. You know, I mean, he I don't know why you got to go to Oxford to figure out how to mess up when it comes to coaching SEC football. But I really thought that would have him prepared for all of the other stuff. And my God, every time there is a chance where he is criticized for something that's probably trivial, probably doesn't need to be criticized over, he just finds a way to get out a big old can of gasoline, dump it all over himself, and light a pack of matches just for good measure. Not just one. He's got to do the whole damn thing. Like, it's one thing for the golf. Like, the golf thing was a little silly, but he just, I'm going to do what I want in my free time. Like, dude, you can't give some sort of, hey, I'm 100% invested in this program, and I'm so confident that I'm out here blasting balls down the fairway. Like, all right, okay, that would have been an easy little layup that would make people kind of laugh at themselves about how stupid it was. But no, he couldn't do that. He was just like, I do what I want. I do what I want. And then he's done this whole bull crap where he's not the play caller, but he is the play caller, and he doesn't want anybody to know who the play caller is. Well, then Derek Nix finally gets out on an island and gets to say how it really goes, and then it sounds like the dumbest mumbo-jumbo that's ever been mumbo-jumboed in the history of the Southeastern Conference. And what does Hugh do? He just regurgitates it. Just regurgitates it. The day after we see him throwing his visor down because Jackson Arnold can't make the throw on time, he goes out and says he wants to play three quarterbacks on his call-in show. I mean, that's not verbatim. He said, well, it could, you know. But, like, you are not diffusing any situation, and there are going to be situations this fall. And the problem that would really piss me off if I was an Auburn fan is that, like, this team is, I mean, pound for pound, like, they're as talented as any in that SEC. Like, I have so much watch. I've been watching Cam Coleman since he was like a sophomore. Kentucky thought they had a chance. Idiots. Like, that was not going to happen. But he has been awesome forever. He would have been awesome last year. And part of me, when you're doing your kind of prognostications, you just like, all right, well, a team that lost that many dumb games, close games last year, surely they're not going to do it this year, because surely they're not going to have Peyton Thorne just throwing touchdowns to the other team late in the year, right? But there's just part of me, that wide receiver group, where I'm like, if Hugh just can get this thing, like, if he can just run a normal offense, if he can do that and have competent, above-average quarterback play, Jackson Arnold doesn't have to be five-star Freddy, just be a four-star Frank. Go out there and just don't give the ball to the other team. He should be pretty good. I mean, Keldrick Falk is awesome. But it's like, this whole offseason has made me just I wanted to have faith in Hugh, and now I'm like, gosh, this guy's really digging his own grave. Somebody take the shovel away from him. They're taking well, what happened is somebody took the shovel and then he went and pulled out an excavator and just started digging an even bigger hole. Gosh, Hugh.
Well, let me ask you this. This is a very popular discussion. It's died down since then. But are you betting on John Mateer this year?
Oh man, that went away way too quick, right? Let's bring it back. That went away way too quick.
Because hell, if he's half the quarterback, people are touting him. I mean, Oklahoma was dog shit on offense last year. And you know, I realize they weren't good, but if they were just average, let's say an average SEC offense last year, they probably would have won 9 games. You know what I mean? So I don't know if the defense will be as good, but with under Brett Venables, I kind of assume it is. And the defensive line, I think, may even be better. So, you know, if they could get a competent offense, this looks like a much improved team, but I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Where are you at?
I am just taking a little sips here and there. You know, because part of me likes the strategy where you just wholesale import an offense. And strangely enough, Clark Lee is kind of the innovator in that with what they did at New Mexico State. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love Jay Nutt. If you haven't seen the OTT Jaden is Ought to Go that the Calgarithm did last year, that just hilarious spoof video for Jay Nutt. Like, I really like the skill pieces. And they went back and they recruited some. Do we really believe in the offensive line? Like, because take all the other stuff out. There were games where, I mean, Jackson Arnold would snap it and have somebody in his face mask. Like, it was as passive of a sieve as there has ever been on the offensive line. And I've seen plenty of bad ones in Lexington in recent years where it just, you're just helpless to do anything. And you can't even, like, that's the part with Arnold. Like, I don't even know if he's good or not because he got his ass kicked so badly. So that's the part with me, Mike, is I want to believe, but I am so just like, I think Oklahoma fans are smart to believe that Beaton Ball can get it fixed. And that last year was just sort of like they had to go full wholesale and get everybody in the trenches, right? They had to get everybody out of there. No, they got some big time recruits. They got that tackle whose name escapes me right now, that freshman who's probably going to play in some.
Michael Fasuzzi.
It's going to take him some time, but like, you know that guy's going to be a good ball player for you. They got a couple tackles. I know UK was recruiting one of them. There's one that was from like the JUCO ranks. Like I like what they did, but there definitely is a, I need to see this. And that's why, like, I think the Michigan game is low key one of the most important games in all of college football this fall. And that's a lame, I hate the phrase low key, but here's how I look at it. I think this year, unlike any other year, most of those national analysts will say, you know, there's 8 to 10 teams who could win the title. It's pretty open. And one of those teams that is going to be in the mix, they are going to be in this sort of second tier of the Big Ten or the SEC, right? Like, you have your top three or four in each league, and then there's just this mix of your in the SEC, it's Oklahoma, it's Auburn, it's Florida, Texas A&M, right? Like, those four are all in that sort of second tier of somebody's going to be really good. The rest of them are probably going to be about 7, maybe 8 win teams. Michigan is, they're kind of in their own tier in the Big Ten in that sort of second level where we know that they're great in the trenches. They just can't throw the football. If Bryce Underwood goes out and throws the football at Oklahoma in week 2, and they have a competent passing attack, then you're going to be saying in the Big Ten, like, oh, shit, Michigan's going to be really good. Conversely, if you're in the SEC and Oklahoma actually punches the Michigan guys in the trenches in the mouth, you're going to be thinking, dude, they might be a playoff team if Mateer can stay healthy. You know, so that game is just like, you cannot make the stakes any higher as far as what it will tell you, not only about each team, but as an overall litmus test for that, for each league on who is going to be that team that punches above their weight and ultimately is threatening to get in the playoff in November.
Mm-hmm. And then one team, last team I want to hit to before we get to your most mm-hmm. boring coaches ranking, Texas. We haven't talked about Texas much at all.
No, we have not.
God's gift to football, March Manning. He's going to win 2 Heismans this year. He's going to go first in this next draft and the following draft. He'll be the first player to ever do that. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on Texas?
I just don't think you could have said it better, Michael, because I'm ready for Archmania. I'm chugging the Kool-Aid. Dump it all over me. And not all of it is just like, it's not all on Arch. Mm-hmm. I do think it is very – as much of having that last name's a curse, they're smart enough to know like that they got his head on right, right? Like he's not going to be bothered by all the Manning stuff. But I saw a team last year that was good enough to win the title. And I remember going down before we went to Austin and we were talking to people from Texas and they wanted to know my thoughts on Ewers. And I hadn't really gotten the full Quinn Ewers experience because I'm, you know, kind of living in my own bubble. I'm not living and dying with every snap. And I'd seen more of the good and didn't really know the bad. Those dips, right? Like, I'm going to play good for two drives and then take off three and just kind of be non-existent. Those killed him because they should have been – I mean, they very well could have been a national championship winning team. I think they're the national champions this year, and it's very much from the same vein of kind of – like I think in – modern college football, they say it's a year-to-year team. I think you run in like two-year cycles of going all in. Similar to Ole Miss, you had a great year, then you get all these dudes from the portal, and then you freaking rock and roll. I think that's kind of the case this year. I really like the running backs they're bringing back, their attack, that'll be able to keep some – keep a little bit of weight off of Arch's shoulders. It's very funny when you ask Mark Stoops about Sark and his play calling, he talks about his screen game. And, like, that's a very way to be able to confuse teams with screen games that was something that's pretty easy to execute that could turn into chunk plays. But that's another way to take some pressure off of Arch. And then, secondly, just, like, look at that defense. I mean, pros. Colin Simmons. Like, where do those guys grow? Like, where do we – you know what I mean? Like Dylan Stewart's like that at South Carolina. Some of these edges that they just – I don't know where they get them. I don't know how like they become who they are. And I'm just – I'm blown away seeing these guys in person just like how – you should not be a sophomore. You should be in the NFL. What are you doing here? You're in college football. So I'm all in. I've got my stonks all in on Sark. I'm betting on Sark. I'm betting on Arch. I believe in them. And I'm really looking forward to betting them against Ohio State because that might be your last chance to bet them as a dog all year long.
And let me follow up there. I mean, how many opponents do they face this year, Nick, where you can confidently say that the opponent is capable of scoring 20 or more points on Texas defense? I mean, maybe Ohio State, but again, even that's questionable because
they got Jeremiah Smith. So you're like, well, he could just do Jeremiah Smith things. But
right.
I mean, that's really the only one that I'm confident in, to be quite frank with you. Like, because Lagway might be good for a bomb touchdown or two. Like how Mateer strikes me as a more methodical player. So like, you know, that's a rivalry game that could be close, but it's going to be a barn burner. Same thing with A&M. Like you can see some close games, but like, Texas could average 24 points in a lot of these big contests and still win. And, right. And you know, the other part too, Georgia, I know that they really howl on that wide receiver talent, but like, how much do we believe in Bobo and Gunnar Stockton? Like there's some, like I'm not willing to go all in on them. So like, but I am willing to go in all in on the combo of Sark and Arch Manning, even though we've seen a lot less of him. I think you're going to see some good ball down there at ATX. Have you made your way to the stadium yet, Mike?
Which one?
To Texas UT DKR Memorial Stadium down in Austin.
I've been there, not for a game.
Okay. It was down there when Kentucky actually played them kind of well. It's the Shaq meme. I was unaware of your game. You know, I knew, but I also didn't know. No, like you don't know it until you see it. And when they
hosted Alabama a couple of years ago, where they should have won, they got cheated. That was kind of eye opening to me with their fans.
Mm-hmm. Ball player. I mean, they get after it.
Well, you know who else gets after it? Our buddy Cousin Rick. He just gave us $20. Play
shout
a little
out Cousin
for
Rick.
Him.
Yeah.
It's Texas A&M's biggest fan, Cousin Rick. Gig'em, Aggies.
Say something nice about Texas A&M for Cousin Rick here.
I actually really want Reuben Owens to do well this year because he was a one-time Louisville commit, and they actually thought that they were dumb enough to think that Reuben Owens was actually going to go there. So it would be fun to see him kind of be what we all think he could be. The other thing I would say is that I was down there in 18 and I was like, gosh, this place is a cult. Dude, I would love to be in a cult. Give me a part of that cult. That place is incredible. And I would just say the only mean thing, you know, there was a perfectly good head coach you were going to hire and you didn't. Like, what the hell?
Well, hey, that's a perfect segue. Last thing here, Nick's ranking the most boring coaches in the SEC. I'm curious to know where Stoops is. Where would you like to start with? Maybe the most entertaining, or
yeah, we're going to start with the most entertaining and work our way to the most boring. Because as much as I loathe Eli Drinkwitz, he's the only fun one at SEC Media Days anymore. Like, he says stuff, and sometimes, you know, he'll get on his he'll get on the podium and pontificate. He likes to grandstand, and you know, back in my day, but like, at least it's entertaining. Like, you know, hate it or love it, that dude, he delivers the goods. He talks shit, and he's done a better than expected job of backing it up. I wish more people like didn't take themselves so seriously and like were so worried about saying the wrong thing instead of just like kind of having fun. Like, he seems the type that, even though he will, it's not like he's just doesn't know what he's saying. Like, he at least is trying to like enjoy this ride, because you're an SEC football coach, you should be having some fun with it. I bet some people are surprised I didn't have Lane Kiffin up here number one, because Lane, when he wants to have fun, he has a lot of fun. But I don't know if you've ever sat through some of those press conferences or those teleconferences, that when he doesn't want to say anything, he is just like disgusted that I just can't believe that somebody would even ask him a question.
He is still to this day, Nick, he's the only one on the SEC coaches teleconference weekly phone call they do. He was taking a leak during one of them. I have the audio recordings if anybody needs to verify. We played that on the show as well. He's the only one that has ever been actively using the bathroom during his call.
There was one of those where I think he like faked technical difficulties, where he was like scratching against it because he just didn't want to deal with it. Sorry, can't hear you. Can't hear you. I'm like, Lane. So when he's good, he's good. When he's not, he just doesn't care at all. One coach who I think could be challenging at times if you were covering him on a day-to-day basis because he's cagey and keeps it private would be Kirby Smart. But Kirby Smart is the new Nick Saban. When he speaks, especially not like about specific players, like ask him about depth. Like, he don't want to talk about that. But if you ask him about like college football overall, like, that dude is like, I hang on every single word he says. Right. So like that part of it. And I just love that Kirby Smart, they couldn't have built a Georgia football coach in a lab better than Kirby Smart. But they just couldn't.
Yeah, I love that haircut too. I was so surprised you had Shane Beamer next.
I don't like Shane Beamer at all, but you know, I love to hate. And when he's, I don't know if you did your homework, Gene, and he's going at reporters, and then I don't know, like that Zoom call where they play Georgia, and he's like, I don't know what they're doing, like. It's funny.
He has really taken exception to this wife's cookies thing, you know?
Oh, my God. Like, dude, just. Maybe at least, like, it's your wife. I get it. It's a little bit different. You know, if somebody talked trash about my wife, I'd stand up for her. But, right. Like, he only knows how to lay it on thick. Like, there's no just like quick hitter. Like, subtlety is not in his vocabulary. He doesn't understand the art of it, but it also makes for an entertaining coach. And when he talks, I'll listen.
And next you got Sam Pittman. I mean, I'm a little surprised he's not even higher on the list.
Well, because he's kind of similar to Lane in that he can be a little bit boring. And sometimes the way he talks can almost kind of put you to sleep, and then he'll say something that wakes you up and you're like, ah, there he is. There he is. So there's enough of those moments. Let's just win enough this year, Sam. Come on. Bobby, just don't do bad enough to get him fired. Like, keep Sam around for another year, and then you can take over his job. He just got a new hip after all. Like, come on.
Right.
Be kind to him.
And I'm sure you saw the viral clip. Someone last week said, hey, no one's excited for your sixth year, but they're excited about year two, Bobby Petrino. Did you see that?
I missed that. That is.
He said, where the hell's the question? That was pretty funny.
Dude, that. Man, I'm uncomfortable just thinking about being in that room. Jeez.
Then you got Sarkisian next. He's a wild card. He's a little high up there for you.
Yeah, well, because I just still haven't figured out Sark. Like, his name is Sark. He looks like a Sark, but when he talks, he sounds like a Steve. There's just something about it's kind of a little weenie voice like this, and I can't figure it out. And that's the same thing with the next guy, Jeff Lebby. Like, is that a Mississippi accent? Is that a Texas accent? What are we doing here? Like, rah, rah, rah. Like, I can't figure it out. So the whole time I'm just locked in, like, what are you saying? Like, I don't know what it is, but it sounds good to me.
Right. And you also got Brian Kelly in this mix too.
Yeah, because we might get him smacking a table around, right? Or he might he might say, even if it is total BS, it's like, okay, all right, Brian Kelly, I appreciate you at least giving some effort. You know that like we have to do this for work. So I appreciate you trying, even though you don't want to. He also might, I mean, the line he had about wanting to kill all of his players or whatever, where he just totally butchered it. That's one of my favorite. Like, I know what you were trying to do. You did not land the plane there, Brian Kelly. So he at least gives it the old college effort, which, speaking of, Clark Lee. Yes, his monotone, it's the definition of putting you to sleep. But, Mike, don't you feel like you get a little smarter when you listen to him? Like, oh, man, I haven't heard that word since I had to read Catcher in the Rye in high school, you know?
Well, he did go to Vanderbilt.
Oh, and you know it as soon as he opens his mouth, right? Like, so at least with Clark Lee, I'm like, oh, wow, matriculate. That is, love that. Like, let's get matriculated with Clark Lee.
I didn't get much of that Vanderbilt education in his Netflix, firing up the team, though, which I liked him showing his personality there.
Well, and that was, it made sense because it's like, how could these guys want to go play for this dork? But it's clear that he has, like, I'm the Vanderbilt dork side of me, but then I'm the jock fullback side of me. We just hadn't seen it before. And so that helps you understand how they were able to do what they were able to do a year ago. Can they keep it up? That's a big question. Mm-hmm. Big question.
And you got Brent Venables next. I hope you've never had to sit through 45 minutes of him speaking before they get to the first question.
Honestly, I should have had him higher. Like, in hindsight, I regret it. Because he is just really matter of fact and boring. Yeah, that this is on bad ranking. Like, sometimes the AP voters, they mix up. He should be much, much higher on the most boring coaches in the SEC list.
Right, because you got a Hugh Freeze next. I mean, I'm no fan of Freeze, but I would give him, I think he's more entertaining than old vegetables.
See, with Freeze, I mean, I've actually been put to sleep listening to Hugh Freeze talk. Like, literally, like, there's a picture of me, and I'm doing the whole, like, I got, like, my readers on so it doesn't look like I'm sleeping. Like, the words he says are so boring, but the context he says them in make them entertaining, right? Like, sometimes he's just a dumbass, you know? So, like, that's where he just sounds like the preacher that, like, it's a hot day in church, and you're like, all right, we're on minute 35 of this sermon. Like, I'm just going to close my eyes for 10 minutes and wake back up. Like, that's what I get from Freeze until he starts, stepping in dog poop again.
All right, now, I mean, these bottom four, I don't know how you separate them. Billy Napier, Kalen DeBoering. Hell, he's DeBoering for a reason. He's top five. I don't know how you separate any of these guys.
So, that's a very good point. It is hard to separate one from the other because DeBoering is a great term for him. But he's still the Alabama coach, and like he's new. That's part of it. There's a newness to him that I'm still just trying to figure him out. Whereas, and Billy Napier can be boring, but oh shucks, he says it to you like it, you know, you want your old ball coach to say it to you, you know. He's our for the boys. We're gonna play for the team. So like you get a little, all right, I can. He's not saying anything, but at least he sounds good. And then my guy, Mark Stoops, his saving grace from not being like the most boring is he does get pissed off every once in a while. And he also he'll like make jokes, but they aren't like really good. But,
but at least like, he's trying.
Exactly. You know, and he kind of laughs at him. And, you know, him and I, sometimes we go back and forth. So like that keeps me on my toes. I had an eventful media days with him this year. Whereas like Elko, the Vegas, my defense sucks press conference kind of saved it from me, but I don't know if you could ever be more boring than the most boring coach in the Southeastern Conference. Maybe the most boring coach in the history of college football, Josh Heupel. Nobody has ever, like, I actually commend him. Nobody has ever been able to say less while using words than Josh Heupel. I mean, it is like, here are 25 words that mean absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it's a credit to him. And you know what? He's able to get away with it because he's good at drawing up plays. He's a good ball coach. You know, like if you're doing well down there, they don't care if you're being mysterious about the quarterbacks and all the other stuff, right? It doesn't matter. Heupel, as much as I hate to say it, Mike, he's boring, but he knows ball.
Right. It used to be something a must watch, the Tennessee press conference. Now I literally never watch it because you gain nothing from it. It's a complete waste of time. But you know who's not a waste of time? Thor Kane gave us $5.
Shout out Thor. Support.
My guy, go Cats. So, Nick, I think this has been a very successful debut.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have you on again every week here during the season, probably Tuesdays, right?
I think so, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Tuesdays.
Tuesdays sound good for me. Sound good for you?
It sounds fantastic to me. So, again, we'll iron out all the details. Before you go, though, Nick, can you tell our audience how to follow you and how to find your work?
So, I'm a part of Kentucky Sports Radio. We're in the On3 Network. We're the OG On3 team site. We were the first one to join the On3 crew back in the day. I don't even know if they had a name whenever we got on. But Roush KSR, like Jack Roush Racing, the Jack Roush Mustang, that's where you'll find me on Twitter. We're having a lot of fun out there. We're mixing it up. Excited to talk some SEC ball with y'all all season long. And just don't hold my fandom against me, you know.
Oh, wait, one thing I forgot to ask you real quick.
Yeah.
I saw you engage with this, so I know you saw this. Thoughts on Missouri, no rocks this year.
Oh, God. It's almost a worse travesty than losing the Cracker Barrel. It's not as bad, but, like, what is Missouri without rocks in their end zone? Are you still Missouri? How will people know you're at Missouri if there's not a giant M made out of rocks that you use to make build ditches? I don't know. No idea. So I was very disappointed, and I get it. You got to make all the fancy smancy areas, and but like it still could have worked. I like the quirkiness of having a burn that like you didn't have to necessarily like not everything had to be fancy. That felt very old school. I liked it a lot, but Missouri, shame on you. You lost the best thing you had going for you. Trying too hard to be SEC. You're Missouri, okay? Just keep being Missouri. Oh, you know what they should do? Mike, this is... I don't even know if I want to say it out loud, but, I mean, you should be auctioning off those rocks for NIL money, right? It's like when you tear down the old stadium and you get rid of the seats and you sell them, you sell the bricks that came from it. You got to sell the rocks. Like, you mean Como Mike's not going to buy that rock and have a little plaque on it in his bar? Like, hell yeah. Give me some of those.
I was just about to say, if they sell the damn rocks, I swear I'll buy one. I'll throw it up here.
It'll look great in your backdrop. It'll look great.
All right, perfect place to cut it. Thank you again, Nick. Thank you to all the cousins out there. The schedule's a little wonky. I'll be back over the weekend to react to some of these games, even though they're not SEC. Stay locked in. We appreciate each and every one of you. Cousin Shane will be back before you know it. And until then, we're holding down the fort. We love you. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.